Om Shanti. Good morning. Just out of interest, who's sitting here and their first language is English? Not many. Who's sitting here listening in English without translation? Okay. Who's needing translation? Gotta wait for that one. Okay. That means I have to speak slower and more simply. This topic, in fact, is they were running a talk on it in Oxford. I thought this is an interesting topic. Is my thinking second hand? So in fact it's a second hand topic as well, isn't it? Borrowed from somewhere. But the topic intrigued me and got me reflecting, because in fact if you had to give a subtitle, the subtitle would be, how much does Baba really influence my thinking, rather than anyone else or anything else? Because in a sense, Baba is the only original thinker. Everyone else copies. From the beginning of the Copper Age onwards, we've been copying each other. In our relationships with each other too, we've been influencing each other. And so it's become such a mess. The other day I had an image of a plate of live spaghetti. How you can imagine a plate of spaghetti, right? But moving like worms. So that's how tangled we've become with each other and in our thinking. And I have to free myself from that and see it. How much of what I even believe now is something that I've taken for myself? It belongs to me. It's my own experience. And how much of it is from someone else? I get happy because other people are happy. I get, you know, I repeat the things that I've heard because they seem right. But actually I haven't made them my own. In a sense, that the only way that we can progress here is on the basis of our own experience and faith, and not on the basis of watching other people's faith or watching other people's experiences and commenting on them. Just take today's Muli, for example. Just think about it. I know that we're preparing for Baba tomorrow, so I'm not going to get you to talk. But just think about it. When Baba says something like, water the seeds of your specialities with powers so that there's fruit, what's your experience of that? How much do we bring Baba into the equation, or is it merely just an intellectual exercise? Yeah, well, point one, point two, point three, yeah, that seems right. You know, I think last year or the year before, there was an article in Scientific American, which is a very prestigious scientific journal, and that was about how critical thinking, analytical thinking, brings us away from religious activities, in this case, God. You know, the more we stimulate our intellect, perhaps the further we are from understanding. It's a paradox, isn't it? to understand something means that I've really made it my own. It's not from someone else. There are two influences on us, perhaps, maybe three. The third, everyone has the first two influences, and the third influence is only the really fortunate ones. But the influence from our own past and all of the experiences that are there and the sanskars that are coming up all the time and influencing the formation of thoughts. And how do we know what we're thinking is not a second hand from the past? You know, in the world these days, they don't say second hand cars, they say pre-loved cars or pre-owned cars, right? They don't say second hand. Doesn't sound good, does it? Anyway, is my thinking now just the consequences of a lot of thinking and experiencing in the past? Or is it fresh? Is it sort of open? Am I open to change? That's the first indication of how much I'm influenced by my own thinking, is my openness. Right? Stubbornness, for example, means that I'm totally influenced by my own past thinking. So, you know, I've stopped, I'm stuck. So the first influence definitely comes from our own past, our own sanskars. The second influence are the influences that come from other people. Like Baba says, paramat. So the first one, probably manmat. The influence of all of my past experiences that keep me in the past and don't allow me to progress in the present. And paramat would be the influence of the pasts of all of the other people and how they're thinking and behaving and saying things to me. I can check how much my thinking is. Well, it's not original because Baba's the only original thinker, but let's say near to the original, is when things happen. For example, when I have to make a tough decision, who do I go to? How do I sort it out? If someone criticizes me without any reason, how do I react to that? Is it on the basis of past experiences of being criticized? Or is it on the basis of the influence that Baba's having on my life now? It's like that, you know. An opportunity comes up. How do I respond to it? Is it on the basis of the ego? Wow, look at this. I start to see myself, you know, if I take this opportunity on board, I will become this, I'll become that, I'll become that. Or is it just the, you know, the openness to grow with Baba's guidance and so on? So I can check myself pretty easily. How do I respond to a temptation? That's a very clear indication of how much my past sanskars are present in my thinking and how much Baba's influence is there to keep me away from it. So there are many situations we should give ourselves sorts of tests. I remember many years ago in the history hall, there were just a few foreigners there, and Baba was there. And Baba gave a long drishti and he said, "You think too much." Everyone, of course, looked at each other. Who's the one here thinking too much? We should think less and experience more, perhaps. Because critical thinking is one thing, but analytical thinking is another. Both of them take me far away from real understanding. And we've been trained to think in order to understand. So in a way, it's like self-defeating. We think in order not to think anymore. Then we speak in order not to speak, because we've sorted it out. We don't need to say anything more, because we said it all. So speaking to not speak. Thinking to not think. Right? And in fact, service, look at it. Doing in order not to do. Because it's already finished. So there's that, isn't there? You know? Is my thinking helping me to move forward? Is my thinking stopping me from moving forward? Is my thinking keeping me in the past for any reason? Some of you may have read Vivekananda's books before, Gyan. He wrote a book on all of the different main types of yoga, like Raja Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, like Gyan Yoga. In the book on Bhakti Yoga, he talks about two types of bhakti, two types of devotion. Now, think about it. Where am I? One is called like preparatory bhakti, gauni bhakti, in which you're devoted to an ideal, but you still have aversion to other people's ideals. You know, I guess fundamentalists come into that category, and even in the BK family we have, you know, people that are very difficult to put into contact with others from other religions, because they have that, you know, we are right, you are wrong, we are the selected few, you are just Shudras, you know. I'm not joking. Have you seen that? Have you seen any fundamentalist type behavior in the Brahmin family? Maybe when we come into Gyan, just see what we tell our Lokiks. You know? How much did I understand? I remember getting my family together. I said to them very solemnly, you know, Dad, I'm making efforts to become a deity. And of course my Lockheed father looked at me. Come on. Maybe there are things that we don't need to save, right? Who has made some mistake in the beginning of Gyan with friends and relatives? Come on. Honest time, all of us. So that's when our devotion is still divided. I'm right, everyone else is wrong. I'm saved, everyone else is damned. In fact, everyone's different and everyone has their own higher stage. No one's better than anyone else. No one's worse than anyone else. So have I made that understanding my own? Baba doesn't condemn anyone. Even the last soul, whoever they may be, Baba wants to return that soul to his own higher stage. And the other type of devotion, para-bhakti, that's what he would call it, is when you have so much love for God that there's no room for any hatred, no room for any aversion. There's no room for anything else, actually. So do I ask myself, have I made my love so powerful that there's absolutely no room for hatred or aversion? You know, you avoid people, or you feel like that with people. Can you live with anyone? If you can't live with anyone, probably you can't live with yourself either. Maybe. Do we still have aversion for anyone? Even within the Brahman family? I like these ones, but not those ones. That's really second-hand thinking, pre-owned thinking. Where's that voice coming from? Okay. So, where am I? It's not just who am I, is it? Where am I on my efforts? Am I free? And of course, freedom can be an illusion, right? It's not free to do whatever I want. It's freedom from the vices. That's the real freedom. And we've got a lot of possibilities for our thinking in a day. Recently I was with they'd organized a talk with the airport authority in the northeast of Brazil. The center had organized, and I was with the top leadership for that organization of the whole many states of the country. And I asked them that, you know, that how many thoughts do they have in a day? And I made a quick calculation with them. There are 1,440 minutes in one day. And if we spend, let's say, 440 minutes resting, or, you know, on average, I'm not talking about Brahmins. Brahmins probably have much less than 440 minutes. But on average, these people will be having... So let's say there are 1,000 minutes left over of waking time. And if you had, let's say, a fragment of this and a fragment of that every 2 seconds, you know, an image, an idea that comes up, or a thought, a desire, you know, anything that's sort of disputing space in our mind, and you had one of those little fragments every 2 seconds, that means 30,000 fragments in a day. It's a lot of fragments. And we've got to sort that out, right? We've probably got to reduce it, and we've got to join the pieces as well. Reduce the number and join all of these fragments into something that makes sense. Because obviously if you're in a state of fragmentation, it's very difficult to be an integrating influence on others. Right? If you're fragmented and you're talking to someone else who's fragmented, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? A big fragmentation, right? More fragments. Fragments are little bits, right? So I come with my little bits, the other person comes with their little bits, and they sort of share their little bits and go their own way with their little bits. Right? In those fragments are sort of circling around, some of them are very important, and we have to make them bigger. And we have to make them solid. And a lot of them are not very important. Actually, they have no existence except inside my own head. They have no substance. Imaginations, right? It's probably the area of our thinking, the imaginary thinking, where we lose time more. We imagine people's motives. We imagine the future that's not never going to happen. You know, I imagine a future better than the present because I can't handle the present for any reason. And that future's never going to happen. A good future will only happen on the basis of a good present. So if I'm, that's the law of karma, isn't it? So if my present is full of moaning and groaning, right? Lamentations and sort of confusion, the future's probably going to be a little bit more of the same. Right? So good futures don't come unless I sort out my present. So it's no use putting off being happy to some future moment. I can only be happy now. I can only be loveful now, in fact. Any experience is only possible in the present. I can't live off a possible future happiness that we call hope, let's say. Hope's sort of empty in a sense. Better to be happy than hoping to be happy, right? I hope that things get sorted out. No, it's better to have things sorted out than just to hope that they will. Even Baba says that Baba has hope in his children, but Baba's hope is based on pre-knowledge. He knows, right? He knows. Does my hope know? Or does my hope just hope? In Spanish and or Portuguese and some other languages, even French, the word hope and the word wait is the same word. Esperar. In Latin, esperare, it means to hope and also means to wait. So is my hope waiting or is my hope knowing? Big difference. And the other day I was remembering, for some reason, you know how, you know, the ups and downs and the path itself, the pilgrimage. I was remembering a famous book. It was a simplified version of another one. In English, I don't know in how many other languages this book has been translated, but it's a book called Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan, written in the 17th century. And the other one, of course, is a much more complicated book in the same line, which was actually three poems by Dante. In Italian, Inferno is the first book, means hell, Purgatory and Heaven. He wrote three books. In both cases, it's about a pilgrim. In Dante's case, it was him on a pilgrimage with Virgil, a Roman poet. And they go through all sorts of things, you know, to get to the goal. It's like the Western versions of the Ramayana, right? All sorts of ups and downs, all sorts of adventures to get back to where they came from. And in Dante's case, it's like there are nine levels of hell, you know, and we understand what hell is. It's just the burning of the vices and the influence of anger and lust and so on the soul. The images that Baba talks about in the Garud Purana, in which they, you know, that if you do like this, you'll be born like a snake, or, you know, if you do like that, this will happen. Like putting fear into people. So our images of hell in the West are from Dante's Inferno. You know, all of these demons sort of roasting you on a spit, sort of boiling you in oil, all of that sort of thing. Thanks to Mr. Dante. And there are 9 levels. And then purgatory is like the subtle vices, yeah. There are 7 levels. So you've got 9 levels of the gross vices, 7 levels of the subtle ones, and then still 9 levels of heaven. So probably Silver Age stuff, right? Before you get to the top, which is like the mountain of God, where the angels are, yeah? So all of our trials and tribulations are part of the story. Where am I? You know, if I'm still involved in the gross vices, I'm still in the Iron Age. If I have a problem with anyone else, I'm still in the Copper Age. My efforts. If I only have problems with myself and with no one else, I'm probably getting into the Silver Age stuff. And Golden Age is when I have absolutely no problems with anyone and nor with myself. I'm okay. So isn't that the goal of our thinking? Isn't the goal of our thinking to become absolutely okay with others and with ourselves? Right? So think about your disputes with others. If you're disputing, if you're arguing, like Baba said the other day, if you're, you know, still struggling with others, unfortunately you're still in the Copper Age. If it's really gross, you know, shouting and maybe physical, you're still in the Iron Age, you know. Copper Age sort of struggles will be, you know, like innuendos. Like you won't say anything directly. You'll say it to the side, or you'll say it with a second meaning. If you've got second-hand thinking, you'll say things indirectly, not directly. Have you ever seen that? People speaking indirectly with absolute full of meaning, everyone knows what they're talking about. Copper Age stuff. Merchant stuff, right? Merchants like to sell, and they do anything to sell. Even lie about their products. So, where is my thinking getting me? How much influence in my thinking is from my own sanskars and not from Baba? How much of my thinking is from others who whisper things into my ears? I've read something somewhere. You know, there's lots of human gurus out there too. The latest pop psychology, how much of that is influencing the way I think? You sit down and try to write something, for example, and see how much of it is a product of your own churning and your own experience with Baba. It's not easy. I'm not saying that it's easy. How can I be objective if I'm stuck in my own story? Yeah? I won't see things as they are. I'll see things as I am. Or I'll see the things like there are, Baba once said, the population of our heads should be two. Right? Me and Baba. No third person. So is there anyone else inhabiting my head except Baba and me? And there we are together trying to unravel. But with Baba's helps, I am trying to unravel my existence. I'm trying to unravel the spaghetti that I've jumped into. Yeah. So, what does it mean, for example? Today Baba says, unlimited renunciation. What does it mean? What is the experience of it? Or is it that I know the words, I've read it somewhere, I can translate it for myself? You know, I know the concept. I can compare that concept with some other concept. Or is it an experience that I have? If it is an experience that I have, it's not second hand, it's becoming first hand. I heard a class by Daddy Jenk on this topic, fantastic, you know. But that's Daddy Jenk's thinking. Is it my experience? You know? Even Baba, he puts the things very clearly on the table, but have I picked them up and made them my own? Or I'm just repeating by, you know, what I've heard to myself and pretending that I've actually understood it. Have you ever been in churning sessions with other Brahmins? Yeah? When some teacher gives you a topic to sort of talk about amongst yourselves. Have you ever been in that sort of... It's very interesting. Everyone suddenly becomes an expert on the topic. Have you noticed that? Yeah? I remember even... We stopped doing it because it became ridiculous. We used to do in the early days... when I was in Australia even, and then later on in Brazil I continued, but we used to have like three hour yoga buddies, and at the end we would share experiences. They may have the most amazing experiences, but you know, you're in the meditation, you saw someone was, you know, very, very sleepy, you know, almost falling over, and when they come up to give their experience, I was there, and Baba took me to a rose garden, and Baba gave me a rose. Come on. Maybe we were talking about the experience that we'd like to have instead of the experience that we are actually having. What does soul consciousness mean? Even basic things. What does the pilgrimage mean for me? Where am I? You know, in The Pilgrim's Progress, that book, if you ever get a look at it, it's very interesting, very short, like the Gita. But, you know, there's the it's like mountains and valleys and sort of swamps, and, you know, you've got the swamp of despair. You've got the valley of humiliation. You've got Vanity Fair, which is like a town where everyone, you know, everything is very attractive. And there the pilgrim is sort of walking there and everything's sort of attracting him and everyone is very vain, you know. It's like, you know, real life. And then you're in the swamp, you can't get out of it. And finally, you know, after a lot of struggling, he also gets to the top of the mountain. where God is. So, what happens when you get some time for meditation? Can you immediately sort of, can all of the fragments just dissolve? All of the little things that you were thinking up until then, they just sort of dissolve away and you're just there, the soul and God, nothing else. How much, you know, there's probably a direct connection between the amount of fragments and the ability to concentrate, the ability to focus. Probably, right? As the fragments go down, my ability to focus comes up. As the ability to focus goes down, the fragments sort of, you know, proliferate. Second-hand thinking is also Maya. My own Maya, actually. Maya is me when I'm not okay, right? Maya is not something else. I'm Maya when I'm not okay. So I'm Ravin. Maya's sort of internal wrong thinking. And Ravan is external expression of that wrong thinking, basically. So how much of my internal thinking is Maya inspired and how much of it is Baba inspired? Can you just stop everything and become a soul like Baba says? Or it takes a while to stop. We have a challenge that's permanent. To be able to do exactly that. How long does it take me to become adjusted to whatever going on? Challenge? When you hear people chattering, they're sharing fragments probably, isn't it? Look at this, look at that. What do I do? Wow. Ooh. You know. It's constant. And we've got such a habit of doing exactly that. Can I bring myself to a point? And become that point. And just be in front of Baba. Or is Baba just one of the fragments floating around that I remember from time to time? He's sort of disputing space with so many other things. After all, what is important? What is really important? These are the things that we should be organizing our thoughts around. You know, in the world when there's anything, any living system, whatever it is, it can be a cell, it can be a galaxy. It can be therefore anything in between, meaning me, meaning a family, meaning a BK center, meaning my workplace, meaning a whole country or even a civilization, anything. They all work in exactly the same way. There's an event, whatever the event is, which makes the system organize itself around it. Well, let's say, for example, imagine if who lives in a big city here? A big city. Okay. Even a medium-sized city. Okay. Where the traffic isn't so great. So you can imagine, 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, it's raining, just to add a little bit of spice, and it's the day before a long weekend. So people at 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon before a long weekend, in the middle of the traffic, there's a crash at a major intersection in the town or in the city. What happens to the traffic? Huh? You would say it's chaotic, right? It jams. But then if you go back 4 o'clock the next morning, there are no cars there. So somehow or the other, the thing sorted itself out, right? That's a principle called self-organization. Everything self-organizes. Everything. If I don't lift one finger to do anything about my stage will self-organize. And probably not in the direction that I would like it to. So when there's an event like a truck breaks down or a bus breaks down, right in the middle of a major intersection on a Friday afternoon, the traffic organizes itself around that and sorts itself out. So even to the extent if policemen came, they probably make it worse. You know, things self-organize. Grass does not make any effort to grow. It's sort of, you know, the blade of a grass sort of pokes its head out of the earth and sort of grows. It's not growing because it's really making effort. It's just growing because that's its nature. So if I'm forcing anything to happen, I'm probably not using my own experience. If I'm allowing things to happen on the basis of my experience, then there won't be any feeling of effort. But that's an event that I have to create in myself. You know, I have to, if I'm just waiting for an event to happen, you know, maybe if I go to Matabaan, I'll sort out my traffic, you know. Maybe if I meet Baba, I'll sort out my traffic. Maybe if I'm in a different center, I'll be able to sort out myself. Maybe if I'm in this situation, I'll be able to do that. No. I have to create an event in myself that helps me to organize in the right direction. I have to make things important, otherwise they will not be. Things are important because I've made them important, not because someone else tells me that they are. Even Baba says, he will say, these are five things, important things that you really have to take into consideration. But I have to make them important in order to get my own inner system organizing itself in the right direction. So I'm not doing efforts because, you know, makes me look good, or, you know, I'm not doing efforts because everyone else seems to be doing it. You know, I'm not going to Amrit Vela because, you know, if I don't, the people in my room will think that I'm a bit of a, you know, bit of a wimp. I'm going to Amrit Vela because it's important for me. And I have an experience. I'm listening to the Muli because Baba is speaking to me. And he's telling me exactly what I need to know on this particular day. And I'm picking up on that because I'm concerned with my own pilgrimage, right? Baba's telling me what to watch out for, and Baba's telling me what to, you know. But I have to take it on board and make it my own. And in doing that, I create inner events, inner experiences, around which my thinking starts to organize itself properly. Otherwise, the flotsam and jetsam, you know, the bits and pieces will continue. If I were bits and pieces, 30,000 bits and pieces 5 years ago, and I don't do anything about it, in another 5 years' time, I will still be 30,000 bits and pieces every day. Is that what we want? Probably not. So I need to reduce the quantity and improve the quality. Yeah? And to do that, I need to create inner experiences which are meaningful, which are personal, not second-hand, my own experiences. I probably told this story, but I remember it came very much home to me when a brother several years ago in a retreat here says, you know, I've been meditating 11 years and until now I haven't seen the golden red light of Param Dham. And I said, I have not seen it either. Some people are visual people. Some people are more feeling types. I'm more of the feeling type. I don't see anything. I feel. I don't see points of light. I don't see sort of this orb which is like, you know, the rays, going out in all directions, and this is the ocean of love and peace. I can't see it. I can feel it. So, you know, it would be a shame if you spent 11 years trying to have an experience that was not real for you. When I meditate on Baba, is it the Baba? Or is it one of my little fragments? Is it real, my experience, or is it imagined? You know, one of the things about imagination, it cannot transform us. Experience can, imagination never. So how much do I understand Gyan? That means how much has it become part of my experience and not a bunch of very well organized ideas which are connected amongst themselves and which I can sort of, you know, talk about because I understand the concepts. Am I a dictionary? Or am I becoming a deity? I don't have too much to say, really. But more or less, that was what I was feeling this morning. I'm very aware, and this has become very clear in these stories, the Ramayana and the Mahabharata and our own Western type versions, Dante's Inferno, and even Ulysses trying to get back to Ithaca from after beating the Trojans, all of the monsters that he had to face to get home again. So I'm the Ulysses, trying to get back home. So I'll fight all of the monsters that come. But in fact, the monsters are only figments or creations of ourselves. They don't actually exist. I give life to my own monsters. So think about it. Am I the soul of me, or am I the soul of my monsters? Because if I were not giving them life, they wouldn't exist. So think about all of the images that we surround ourselves with, and let's ask ourselves how many of them really exist. Souls are just souls. Matter, if we were really, really, really detached, I remember, and I don't know if the book is still sold, but I remember talking to Brother Jagdish and Brother Bridgemon, who just finished writing it, was a book called How to Conquer Sex Lust. Have you ever seen that book? How to Conquer Sex Lust. I don't even know even if they sell it anymore. Don't know if it was ever a bestseller either. But they gave such graphic descriptions of using the language. But you know, they were saying, but Baba used to use such graphic language. You know, our bodies are literally more than half of the cells in our bodies are not even human cells; they're bacteria. You know, really. So you're looking at a walking bunch of, at least half of what you see, isn't even human. E. coli and friends. You're laughing, but so when you read this book, you get that sort of a feeling. And I was asking, but well, brothers, you've really gave a strong dose here, you know. They said that Baba used to talk things like that. And then last week, the Morley about the snake was actually the New Year's Day of the year of the snake, and Baba talks about vicious snakes and so on and so forth. But it's all of those things are, you know, imaginary. Vices do not make us happy, so forget trying to invest in them. That's what Baba would say. So, me, Baba, no one else. Population 2. Okay? Om Shanti. Let's have some powerful meditation.